This is the Amp Hour Podcast, released March 3rd, 2019. Episode 432. Check the Dummy Box.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
Hey, Ned.
Hey, man. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
It's been a couple weeks, but always good to talk to you.
Yep.
Boy, do I have something to say to you.
What?
You should come to KaiCon.
Right. It's all happening.
How do you feel about flying for 50 hours to see me?
It's about 40. Don't exaggerate.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. Right. No. Where is it again?
Chicago.
Oh, Chicago. No, it's probably 50.
Yeah. It's like 15 to
LA or whatever. Dallas.
LA, another 40 here. So.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yep. With layovers. Yeah, it's
not a good time.
When is it?
April 26th and 27th in Chicago, Illinois. And tickets are on sale now. And I don't know, did you see the talks that were announced?
Yes, I did. I had a look at the list. It's very...
Yeah, it's pretty good, actually, right?
There's a lot. Yeah, it's tons.
I'm excited. I think the thing that I'm excited about is that, I doubt that people are going to come if they're not KiCad users, but I think there's enough stuff there. If someone wasn't, they were just interested in like PCB design and manufacturing.
Seemed to be other stuff that it was would be interesting that wasn't sort of KiCad specific, really. But
right.
I'm sure they'll all.
Well, yeah, because if it was just about the program, it would be pretty dull, I think.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yep. Totally.
So I think there's enough other stuff, and I think the people listening might be interested in it. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of hooks into KiCad, but like the things like one of the top talks here by Andre is applying CI and CD. I don't know if you know what that is. Continuous integration.
All right.
That's like the software automated stuff, and I think just like automating PCB design, regardless of how you do it, it's kind of interesting. So like tying into GitHub, tying into similar stuff like that. I'm excited about that just because the things that we do over and over again, some of that could be automated. And for a long time, I had no capability to do it. Now I benefit from other people using software people coming in. That I appreciate them. So, and plus, hang out with me if you want. That's a cool part, I guess. And we're gonna party around Chicago, so we'll go do Chicago-y things on Sunday. So,
right,
I'm excited. I'm nervous, but excited.
Come on, you're a conference veteran.
Yeah. Yes, I am. Yeah, I get nervous about those too.
Right. Okay. What people aren't going to show up? What are the fears that go through your mind?
Okay, so like imagine everything that can go wrong.
Yep.
And then double that, and that's like usually what goes through my brain.
Right. Okay. So it's like nobody turns up, then they call in a bomb threat, and then
exactly. And then the food isn't there, or the food gives everyone food poisoning.
And then the projector doesn't work, and then the mics don't work, and
the badges all explode. So, pretty much everything that I could think of.
Right.
I got that covered.
Has anything gone wrong at the conferences you've organized? Like, are things broken down, and you've had to make do, or
no, not to. Not to date. I've sufficiently worried about stuff, I think, beforehand.
Right. That you've sort of had backups or plans in place. So, yeah, I'm looking like, KiCad PCB design for rapid prototyping. It's like, it's kind of, you can do it in KiCad, but I'm sure there's, you can do it in any tool, right? It's just
exactly.
And the heroine schematics, the heroine of electronics design, that's really, is it really about KiCad?
That one actually, that's a Python tool. So that's, right. I mean, that's about using software to build hardware, which is kind of interesting.
Right.
But I think that stuff could be extensible.
Version control, designing with decentralized groups, top five.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Top five footprint mistakes, this is all generic stuff, So that's great.
Yeah. So it's a lot of great sponsors and badges and all that stuff. So
yeah, because it'd be boring if everyone turned up and like there was a keynote about, oh, isn't KiCad wonderful, and everyone just sits around going, oh yeah, KiCad's great, and it's the best thing ever. Yeah, fist bump.
Right.
Right. And that was it. Yeah.
Right.
Well, when I helped out with SuperCon too, it was just like, I don't know, like I remember going to conferences where I wanted to watch certain things, or like, and yeah. There was always stuff like kind of missing, and that's what I was trying to get out of people, is like, be like, give a talk about that. I want to see this, you know? Like,
right.
That's, I don't know if there's like, we've struggled and we've talked about it in the past too, of like you have electronics down there and that mm-hmm. helps, but there's not the talks as much as that's a trade show floor,
no,
right?
No, it's, yeah, no, there are no, well, yeah. There's, you know, occasionally like there's a PCB conference associated with it, but it's all just, you know.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They sort of run at the same time. Yeah. Like in the same, okay. Like they share the same venue and stuff like that. Okay. To, you know, they're sort of intertwined, but yeah, but that's, you know, something you've got to pay huge, huge money for. It's a, you know, it's a big thing. It's, yeah, not, right, you know, exactly. It's not really part of the conference. It's not really part of the exhibition. So
yeah
cool.
Yeah,
so yep. how does it work, like, are they just one after the other over a couple of days, or is it, or do they like on at the same time in separate rooms and you have to pick and choose?
Yeah it's gonna be pick the and ladder. Choose. So there's two rooms, well, right. There's three total rooms. Two of them are gonna actually have talks. Got and it. Then they'll both get recorded though. I mean, basically I'm just copying SuperCon. I'm going to be completely honest.
Right. Okay.
and, sure. You know, for like as cheaply as I can.
Right.
I think that's the best way to see, because otherwise, like if you think about the logistics of it, say you get like four slots in the morning, four slots in the afternoon.
Yep.
If you have a 2-day conference, you only have 16 speakers then.
Right. Like,
that's kind of crazy. Yeah. So we're doubling that, and, you know, it'll be squeezing in more where we can. Yep. But there's, you know, a lot of people that want to give talks, so. That's great.
So do you have to pony up the money up front, or you're relying on the sales, the ticket sales to, you know, you paid a small deposit yourself, and how does it work financially?
Financially, so like it's out of the space here that I work in, MHub. So we're
That's right, MHub are donating the space. Okay, right.
Yeah, right. So they're not donating the whole space, but I you know, they gave me very nice payment terms, and then there's some great sponsors too, and stuff together. I don't think I would have a conference to do it unless some of the sponsors stepped up. So that was really helpful.
Right. Okay. Yep. Yeah. Because that'd be a huge risk if you had to, you know, pony up a huge deposit yourself. Exactly. And, you know. Yeah.
Exactly.
So. Cool.
Yeah, man. So I'm excited. We'll see how it all works out. Excellent. I'll be stressed for the next 8 weeks or so, but after that, I'll be fine.
I went to a meetup last night.
Yeah. How was it?
It was great. I won't say who. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Former employees.
It was technical in nature. It sounded like you had a great time.
Very technical in nature. Former employees of a company who shall remain nameless.
Right.
And they happened to be in the country for a new startup they're doing. And we met up and it was awesome. Talking about all sorts of crap.
Look at this. Dave's finally social. When there's smart enough people in the room, Dave will be social. It can be said. How's that? How's the EEV blog meetup number 3 going? Is that going to be a once a year thing? Like the EEV blog holiday party?
When was the last one? Shit.
You've done two now. One when I was there, and then the second one was 2 or 3 months ago, I think.
I was taking a straw poll there while I was there, and everyone said no, 6 months at a minimum.
Yeah.
Like, don't make it more than once or twice a year. You know,
I think there's benefit to that actually, because then people have time to build up projects and something to look forward to.
They do exactly. They have something new to show off, new to talk about, and things like that. But that works pretty well. You know, I've toyed with the idea of having a more conference-like thing where people could give, you know, everyone sits down and people give a talk. I don't know.
That's not a bar then, that's for sure. Like, it's got to be a different venue.
No, it's got to be a conference center. Yeah. And money's involved. Right. I'd have to get sponsors and, you know, crap like that. And one of the interesting things we were talking about last night was that, what are the differences between, like, the scene here in Australia and, like, overseas. Like, and like they seem quite surprised that I said, well, if I was, you know, single and I had no ties, I wouldn't be doing the blog from here. You know, I'd be in the US, right?
Because
that's just where all the action is, yeah.
What were they surprised about, though? I mean, was for the surprise, not the other stuff.
They thought, you know, that there was so much stuff happening here, and I'm going, well, you know, just not, like, at a vastly smaller scale.
Yeah.
Vastly smaller.
I think if they have any software inclination, though, too, they might be like, oh, well, Sydney does have a ton of software stuff.
Oh, yeah, no, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, there's a hardware startup I just posted on the forum. There's like a startup-y hardware conference that's up in Queensland. It's next month or something.
Oh, okay.
But it's kind of, yeah, it's not really the same. Like, we don't have any conferences here. Like, apart from the yearly electronics exhibition, it's not even a conference. You know, we don't have any of that. Whereas you guys will have, you know, half a dozen. Right.
Yeah, that's true.
A year,
yeah.
Easy. Right.
Oh, more, sure. I mean, like, more. even like,
and
the
local
independent
ones in, yeah.
Right. I was gonna say, like, the independent ones I could think of are like SuperCon, Teardown,
yep.
Just got announced, which is the
what's Teardown?
That's the Crowd Supply based
oh,
one.
Okay.
So it's,
yeah,
kind of
like
general
chance.
Hardware.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. We have nothing like that. You guys like have probably two dozen. I'm sure if you went and researched them and listed them, you'd have a couple of dozen a year.
Sure.
Minimum.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Yep.
And it depends on which specialization you go into as well.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
you
of
can
course.
Go real deep. If you go in
yep.
the security world, they've got their own stuff. If you
yep.
go into like the more mm-hmm. industrial, like right now as we're recording, this is Wednesday, right? We're recording this, the 27th. There's what's it called? Embedded Worlds out in Nuremberg in
yep.
Germany. I guess that's not the US, but like, you know, like there's just
right.
always something
yeah, no,
going
there's,
on.
Yeah, there's something going on, exactly. And that's where all the big names are, and that's where all the big networking happens. You know, if you're based here in Sydney,
yeah.
in Australia, like, you're so far from networking with people, it's just not funny.
Right.
You know?
Right, right.
And,
well, and yeah, it's spaced out too, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty sprawling there, so.
Yeah.
But that's tough. And I mean, I know some people that live, you know, in more remote areas of the US, and if they want to get together
oh,
with
yeah,
people, they
no,
got to
go.
They have to centralize at a conference or something.
Yeah, they have to. Yeah. Yeah, they've got to do their 6-hour flight, you know. To,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. But we don't really, you know, even have the option here. Look, I could turn up to this Queensland startup. Yeah, I could fly up. It's only maybe an hour and a bit, you know, to
mm-hmm.
fly up to Queensland. But yeah, you know, it's I don't know. It's just not
you
the same
go,
scale.
Man.
It's not, maybe.
I mean, it's not the same scale.
Maybe.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
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 But yeah, you got to yeah. you basically got to work a lot harder if you want to meet the same number of people,
yeah.
right? Whereas
yeah.
if you go to like the Bay Area, you can go to like two meetups and probably meet the equivalent amount that you'd meet up in
exactly.
at that larger
yep.
conference there.
Yeah.
So, and
totally.
I think the other thing too is like when I think about the kind of people that I look to meet, you know, like basically the yeah, I like meeting all people, like to be completely honest, but like when I want to like geek out with people,
we
it's like
guessed.
Usually it's a pretty
simple,
pretty similar kind of crowd, right? It's like the EV blog meetup that you did in when I was there. Like that
yep.
crowd was all hardware nerds who were from the forum and watch
yep.
your videos and listen to the show and like stuff like that. I think that's a very specific kind of thing. You
sure.
go to a conference, you're also going to get like, oh, I'm in business development or I'm in software.
Uh-huh.
Or I'm, you
yep.
know, and like all these other things. And it's like, I like meeting them. And it's like, let me say, it's very important to meet those people, especially if you're starting a business or something.
Oh, of course.
But
yep.
But it's a different, you know, you're not going to geek out with them as much,
right.
in my opinion. You're not going to not everyone's going to bring a project to that meetup. How about that?
No, that's right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I will go. Maybe I'll.
I think you should,
yeah.
man. Yeah.
Like,
you got,
like
I mean,
it didn't
I think,
sound
I think
that
if
exciting.
There's only so many options.
It was more like to, like, if you're doing a startup, you know,
mm-hmm.
it was more like, you know, try and maybe, like, meet with, you know, investors and, you know, stuff like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. See,
yeah,
I think the other
yeah.
thing, though, too, is to be what I call a colonizer. I tried to do this in Cleveland, Ohio. Let me tell you, there's not many harder things to do than
right.
being a colonizer in Cleveland, Ohio, where you say, like, hey, you should come here, right? That's, like, a hard thing to do.
Uh-huh.
But, like, but very easily, you could be, like, you, Dave Jones, could
yep.
be, like, I'm going to this thing in Queensland. It might not be the most relevant thing for everyone, but
uh-huh.
let's all just gather there and make like a mini conference within a conference.
That's what I was
yeah.
thinking about. I was just, that
yeah.
just ran through my mind a minute ago. I thought, oh yeah,
yeah.
No, look, if I'm going to this, I'm not just going to go hang out at that event.
Yeah,
I'll,
exactly.
Like I'll advertise it and have like, we'll
bring your posse, you know,
we'll rent another room in that hotel or whatever, you know, and.
Yeah, or even
a,
just be
you know,
at the same conference,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and then
yeah, of course.
Yeah, or hang at
yeah,
a bar
yeah.
at some
yep.
point, you know.
Yep. Yeah, and then like afterwards spill over to something else.
Exactly.
I think it's
yeah.
like a couple of day thing.
Oh, perfect.
A,
yeah.
You know. Yeah. So,
yeah.
anyway, which
yeah,
is interesting
great.
That it's in Queensland and it's not in Melbourne or Sydney. You know,
yeah.
it's like Sydney's usually very slack. Like there's more stuff in Melbourne, or you know, even Adelaide or Western Australia or Queensland. You know,
huh.
it's really.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about Sydney. Sydney has like
it's
software
the price,
ones,
Dave.
Right?
It's the price. Y'all ain't cheap.
Prices are plummeting. you know.
Oh, it's yeah.
It's slightly under $1 million now, you know.
Yeah,
it's
right. Yeah. So affordable, right? Yeah.
So, let me investigate that.
Okay. All right. Well, future announcements to come from the EV blog meetup in Queensland. Yeah. Yep.
Why not? Yeah, I need to get out more.
Yeah,
I've got one. Well, it's not scheduled yet, but I'm doing a meetup with someone just down the road. They're in the local business park, and they want to. They're doing like an in-house talk at their company. It's a huge company, who shall remain nameless at this stage. And they're an expert in manufacturing yield and stuff like that, you know, how to, like, they, you know, he reckons that they've got their failure rates on their boards down to like virtually zero, you know, and there's a whole bunch of mechanisms they put in place to do this. Yeah. All that sort of jazz. Yeah. And he's like, and he gave like, an internal talk about it and wants to now do it like kind of external. So he has invited me in to sort of, you know, we can discuss that. Maybe it can be an amp hour episode. Maybe I'll just take my little handheld recorder and we'll just do an hour talking about manufacturing, production, optimization,
I've been thinking about that recently because I've been making some boards lately and, you know, it's nothing groundbreaking.
Right.
But I keep thinking about like, the things that I'm doing are very obviously, and all the mistakes that I make are very obviously the same mistakes a lot of other people make.
Sure.
You know, like, and for like specifically to manufacturing, I was thinking about the manufacturing side of it. Nobody runs into that stuff until they like, they run smack into it. You know,
until
it's like,
I'm about to
do 10,000 units.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like, now I have a problem. And it's the same problem that everybody else had, of course.
Yep.
But how would you know about it until you get there? And so you kind of have to like what you're talking about. You have to like kind of sample all these different disciplines so that you at least know to be like at least so you see this thing and your brain goes, uh-oh, there's danger here.
Yep.
You know, it's like you're not running towards it. Maybe you walk towards it or you crawl towards it or this potential problem, but you're at least thinking about it.
No, it's always last minute, man. You know, and
Same thing happens for like accounting for me. Right. You know, like it's like, I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm running into the same exact problems that everybody else does. And and sometimes it's amazing to me that there aren't guides out there. You know, like it's not... No one's going to have the exact same situation that I do.
That's it. You can't. It's hard to do a generic guide. There'd be so much things. It's like the last time we were on, we looked at that list, that PCB checklist, and it's practically infinite, you know?
Yeah, that's like, true.
You can't
still,
cater
I think
for
that
enough.
having something where you can skim it and like be like, you're right. Like, you're not going to get everything because like it's always the sub note in the data sheet on page, you know, 58, you know, underneath the diagram that says, this feature does not work or whatever it is, you know, and it's like, it's the last thing that you read and then you read it and you go, oh, crap. You know?
Yeah.
but at least having the list, you might catch one or two, you know, like, I don't know.
And it's like, if you're really lucky, you might get a manufacturer who might like an assembler or something, you know, who might notice, like know that you're going to run into a problem with this, and
they might
tell you up front, but a lot of them won't, even if they do know, you know.
Yeah, because they're also like, busy anyways, right?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
They just expect that you've done it before.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's almost like there should be like a checkbox for like, I'm the new person, you know?
Right. I'm a dummy. Yes, please tell me
exactly.
Everything I'm doing
wrong.
The
dummy box. That's what we need, the dummy box.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they don't want to. Because you're not paying them to, you know, to as a engineering like advice service. You're paying them to do what you tell them to do, and if you tell them to do this, and they know it's stupid and it's not going to work, they're just going to go, well, we'll do it anyway. It's their money, you know.
Yep.
Like,
right.
Or it might work and we'll get, you know, a 50% yield and, well, tough luck. That's not my problem.
You know? That means they got to pay for more services.
That's it. Yeah.
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 Yeah. How are your boards going these days? You still micro supplies chugging along?
It's chugging along. It's or something always new always comes up. You know, it's like we just had to change a few parts for a couple of reasons. And, well, no, it's unstable again now. You know, like, I've got to go through the
like
whole...
Like oscillation stuff?
Yeah, yeah, I've got to go through the whole process again. And,
Yeah, source meter days are coming back to me. I was never good with that stuff, but yeah, capacitive loads and all that
and
jazz.
Then, and just dealing with the software side of things, because the software part of it is so abstracted and high level in the bleeding edge C++, you know.
So you're not digging into registers as much as you're like doing like object oriented stuff.
Yeah, it's doing, you know, the highest end object oriented, you know, professional type approach to it, and we're finding bugs in the GCC compiler, you know, that are showstoppers.
Really?
Yeah, that are showstoppers. Wow. And we have to wait for the GCC developers to come back and go, oh yeah, that kind of doesn't work, you know.
Is this a new part or an older part?
It's a ST part. It's, you know, it's
like
been around
F4?
For a while, but I'm sure. Yeah, and it's got bugs. It's got silicon bugs, right?
No.
There's a silicon bug in the ADC, and of course we're using the ADC, and there's this weird silicon bug to do with low bit resolution or like the I don't know. I can't remember, but yeah, like it's, you know,
But that's the kind of thing where it's like it's buried on page 58, and it's like,
accuracy.
Yeah, sorry, this
No,
this
it's not even
work.
On there. And,
oh,
and
no?
Sure, and sure enough, you go on the ST forums, and it's like, you know, the odd person has had this problem, and ST have gone, oh yeah, we think there's an issue there. We're working on it, you know, kind of. Okay, well, you know, it's a bit. We rely on the accuracy of that ADC, right? And it's
screwing with
the accuracy, right? It actually, like, it's out by, you know, four least significant bits or something. It's like, you know, there's some weird ass bug in it, and it's a pain in the ass. And we're thinking it's part of our circuit, right? We're thinking it's the tolerance of our parts, our reference, and all sorts of things. No, it turns out it's something wrong with the analog to digital converter, you know, at the silicon level.
Wow.
So, and
is that not a showstopper though?
It's not a showstopper. ST have provided some sort of like software workaround or something, and there's other things you can do to do workarounds for it. But yeah, it's like this sort of stuff takes weeks to just these little issues, and bingo, you've wasted another 2 weeks, another, you know, for all these little issues that pop up. And it's just, it's a pain. But we are thinking about an external ADC now, and it's like, you know, because this thing's just given us, you know, a lot of grief, and there's not much you can do when you hit those limits and you're reliant upon the developer of some open source software to fix it, or you're relying on, you know, the manufacturer to fix a silicon bug or come up with a workaround and investigate it and, you know, give you a workaround app note or something, then just kills your development time.
Yeah, this is the darker side of open source, I think. You know, you basically, you have to, sometimes you either got to dig in and start changing the code yourself, which is not great.
Yeah.
Or you got to wait around and just hope that you
start,
can either
GCC,
pay a developer or find a developer.
We can go in and fix it ourselves, right, in theory. Right. Apart from the silicon, we can go in and fix the GCC compiler ourselves. But geez, you know, like, you don't want to be doing that. The other thing we're working on is I've got in my hand right now, I've got a custom planar transformer. We needed the efficiency across a wider range, and especially at lower standby currents and stuff like that. And yeah, we worked out the parameters that we required for this transformer. We went to a custom planar transformer manufacturer. That's all they do. And they weren't particularly cheap to get some prototypes made, but they actually designed this job, and it's really quite sexy.
Is this for their isolation or is this for switch mode?
This is for an isolated switch mode.
Oh, there you go. Why not both?
Yep. And it's cool. Like, it's basically an 8-layer PCB with a ferrite, you know, actually through the board and going around. And it uses the internal layers to make the coils. And
So what's the upside? I mean, upside is really low profile, right?
It's lower profile. That's the advantage of planar transformers usually. And traditionally, technically, this kind of isn't a planar transformer, because a planar transformer is that the coils are the coils aren't stacked on top of each other. They actually fan out flat. So a planar transformer is technically a big, flat, wide transformer, and the coils just radiate outwards, if you know what I'm talking about, like bigger and bigger circles.
Looks, it looks like a spiral, basically.
Looks like a spiral from the top down, whereas this one is not that. It's actually using PCB to drop down to the next layer. Drop down to the next layer and go around. So but it's kind of like the planar manufacturing type, so you call it a planar transformer, but
I think PCB transformer is another probably way to say it, right, or something like
something like that, but and there's advantage, as always there's pros and cons, otherwise everyone would be doing planar transformers, right? If they're so fantastic, they're fantastic at getting better coupling but losses at X frequency. I can't remember the trade-offs, but there's
Because now you're not using air, you're using like a different dielectric, you're using the PCB dielectric.
You're using a different dielectric and stuff like that. But yeah, it's pretty cool. And it took them, apparently our requirements were pretty tough for them. And they had to go through, it actually took some time for them to do multiple revisions and stuff like that. And I was, I'm not sure if they have modeling tools for it. You would think a planar transformer manufacturer, that's all they do, would have some whiz-bang custom tool to, you whack in the parameters and out pops this final design. But apparently that's not how it works. Someone strokes their beard and goes,
volume though.
Yeah, it actually took some time to get this made. And they said, they had to go through quite a few revisions of this thing and to actually meet our specs. So, yep.
Mm.
Anyway, I think it's pretty sexy, and it's cheaper, because you might think transformers are cheap, but good transformers aren't cheap. So so we are saving by going to this planar transformer in terms of a regular custom wound transformer,
Well, you'll also save in weight, and I guess you'll have
weight and the efficiency's better and everything else. So if you want a really efficient traditional wound one, cheap, you can do it, but it's probably going to be much it's going to be much bigger and
that's interesting. You're giving up some efficiency on the
this one's definitely more efficient. It's more efficient and smaller. It's better in almost every way for our particular niche purpose.
Interesting.
Yeah,
but is it the battery is powering the transformer that then pushes it to the isolated side?
I'm not saying.
Secretive, yes. Okay. All right, fine. You do your thing. I'll wait a little
while. All right.
Cool. I was curious though, how do you think about that stuff too? Because I've been talking on the consulting forum, and again, I guess I have to be a little secretive here. But one of the questions I think about is, so between consulting and doing a product, it's almost like if you're doing a product, you're the client and you're the designer.
Yes, that's right.
So I know you don't really bill for hours, but how do you think about it? Is it just we want to get this thing done, so we just get it done?
That's the difference between David Tu and I. Likes, ridiculously rigid specs, and we must stick to the specs, and we must, it's like there's a deadline and there's a specific specs to meet.
I'm
more like, meh, I'm going, he goes, what spec do we need? And I'm going, meh, just make it decent, And to me, that's a valid approach, because this is, you can get caught up by trying to meet a spec, right? And let's say you want 0.1% accuracy, for example, right? Well, what voltage, do you want a 0.1% at full scale? Do you still want 0.1% down at 10% of full scale? Because if you do, that's going to be much harder. You end up stepping up, paying an extra $2 for a better reference just to meet that. Whereas you might not care about, that at lower, but you might argue, hey, well, just make your spec better, right? As in more requirements in your spec. Okay, at 10%, it's X spec, and at you know, 50%.
Yeah, but that's tough too when there's not like you don't have a product group yet. You know, no, like after there's something in the market for, you know, 10 years and it's like, well, there's all these different offerings and if we slaughter our specs in between, you know, the number 2 and number 3 producer out there, then we can definitely hit all the
do it. That's right. That's when it pays. But like, when you're developing your own thing for that nobody really has a hard requirement for, it's just
I'd say almost like it's like a, you know, the spec is the what are people willing to pay for at the beginning,
and then make the category. Price matters, of course.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. And but there's some other things you spec, you know, like but it's like you can't just make everything rigid because you might see, oh, well, look, if I loosen my spec by 0.1%, I can use this part that's 10 times cheaper, you know, and it's like, oh, that spec's going to be good enough and it's going to be, or we can get the user to calibrate it themselves or something, or, you know, things like that.
Right,
we can have a calibration process in production instead of designing in the calibration by buying expensive parts.
Like a self-test.
And doing all that sort of stuff. You know, so, it's difficult.
Is it? No, it's a tough balance. And I think, I think sometimes it's harder to design something when there are no specs just because, what do you do? Like, how do you make these decisions? You know, like, if you have a complete greenfield, you don't have constraints, and engineering is all about constraints. So then, like, you basically have to impose constraints, and you have to hope that your constraints aren't ridiculous, you know?
Well, see, I can see it from David's point of view because it's my project. Right.
Yeah.
But he's the one doing most of the design work on it. And it's like, so to me, it's more personal. To him, it's just, it's just an engineering task that needs to be completed, you know?
Yeah.
And I would be in exactly the same position, right? When I had a real job and, I would want those specs. It's like, don't give me open specs. I want something to work to. Otherwise I'm just going to, make something
up on
my own.
How do you know you're done otherwise?
Yeah.
You know, like that's.
Yeah,
that's a big
how
thing.
Do you know you meet the deadline for this month so you can show it off at the design review meeting and you can, you know, the Gantt chart, you can tick off that section of the Gantt chart and it's done.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
and
true.
All that sort of stuff. Whereas, you know, me, because this is more of a personal project for me rather than, a hard and fast, professionally, it's just a product and I don't care. Right, it's more personal to me, so that's when I don't like specs because I like being able to just breeze on through and go, I'll change the direction this way because that's more fun, or this will be cooler, or I don't like. It's just it's very different to when you're designing for a client or whether you're designing for a company, and you're just an engineer on the team or whatever. It's very different.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. It'd be different if my job was not making videos and my job was an engineering company designing products, right? If that was my, that'd be very different.
I was going to say, too, like you said, you're designing it for you, right?
Yeah,
and that's,
right.
I think that is actually a good way to do it sometimes because
in
a wide open field where there isn't really a thing in this category, it's like, okay, then pick one person and why not you? But I think if you're like you're saying, if it was a company, then what you would do is then you would be the product manager and you'd go out and you'd be like, all right, I'm going to find 100 people who are likely buyers and then figure out what they need and capture all their things. It's like boring. And what is the willing? What are you willing to pay for this right now? It's like,
Yep.
So that's fun. At least you don't have to do that piece. At least you're like, you just have to like scratch your head a little bit, be like, yeah, I think I'd like that. It's okay.
Right. Oh dear. Anyway.
Yeah. So. Well, get them specs, man. Get them specs. Look at that. David's texting you right now, and he's just like, Dave, I need the specs.
That's my meetup last night. He's doing.
Oh, nice.
he's actually working on this new startup product, and he doesn't like it. It's it's reasonably groundbreaking, and he didn't tell me how he did it. Right, so he's like, there's this specific technical thing that they're doing, and it's like nobody's done it this way before, and so we're I'm throwing a few ideas at the uh, at the when we met up, and he's like, nah, it's not really that. Nah, keep on thinking about it, you know. And this morning I finally, aha, this is the only way he can do it. And I think I'm on the money. So he's now texting me. So I texted him and it's like, it's on the nice. Money. I think it's on nice, the money. Nice. I think I've figured it out. It was like a process of elimination. No, they can't use this. There's only, you know, several techniques you can use to do this thing. And
That's great.
Yep. Anyway. So, yeah, I think I got him. I like it.
Well, another product I was going to mention is one I've been playing with a little bit, is the Jewel Scope. Have you seen that one?
What's a Jewel Scope?
It's on the subreddit. So basically, this is not necessarily a new concept, but I like the interface and everything too. So it's Matt Liberty who's doing this. He was just on Embedded, actually.
Right.
2 weeks ago, 1 week ago.
And he's got a Kickstarter. But
basically,
it's Kickstarter. He has met his goal.
Yep. I think he actually has a Jewel Scope in your mailbag right now, but he's. I don't think he'll make it in time, so that's okay.
Oh, really? What's sitting here?
Apparently, yeah.
Oh, okay.
You could probably like open it up while we're going. No.
Oh, geez. Okay. It's got another 21 days left. So, you know.
Yeah. Perfect. It's cool though. So it's like a low power measurement thing, and you know, it's a hard thing. He was trying to explain it to Alicia and Chris on Embedded, and basically it's like the software switching of ranging, and basically it's, you know, it's a competitor to the microcurrent, but it's, you know, it's got digital range switching and stuff like that.
Yep.
And, but like the same thing that the microcurrent does, basically it's for people that are trying to measure super low currents, and then it can range up if you have like, so say you have like a Wi-Fi device, it's in sleep mode, then it turns on. It's, you know, it's
I'm working on dumping a bunch of current. Well, it looks like I'm working on the exact same thing. So.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yep. Okay.
On what, micro supplies like that or no?
No. A follow-up to the thing. Microcurrent, yeah.
Got it. So it's cool, though. So there's other people that are doing this. What was it called? There is another one. I'll look it up in a second. There, you know, so ST actually has like a dev board that does this kind of thing as well. So it's not like you have to do this kind of thing.
Oh, do they?
And this is definitely really? a little more upmarket. Yeah, there's one that's a cheap. It's like it's meant to be. Maybe it was NXP. It was basically one of the board manufacturers put one of these kind of in line. They used a bunch of op amps and they put it in line for doing power monitoring, ostensibly to, you know, show, hey, we're also making these low current parts. Why don't you measure the low current while we go? So. And now I'm trying to remember the other one. It was like, I think they advertised on your site at one point. It was like another current monitor. It was out of Sweden.
I don't recall.
Yeah. But there was another one that was like that. And they were doing similar things as well, where they basically could do current ranging, you know, from low levels up to high levels. And this is, you know, like, so I think you've made videos about this before.
Yeah, yes, I have.
You know, sleep versus.
Yeah, yeah, it's hard because it's a dynamic range issue and range switching isn't as trivial as it appears because when you're measuring a sleep current, for example, and when that processor wakes up, you've got to have. Well, to measure that low current, you've got to have a series shunt resistor that is a high enough value so that you can actually read the, you know, it's, you know, taken, you know, half a microamp or something, right? Yeah. So you've got to have a high enough value. But then if it instantly wakes up, then that resistor starves the processor of actual current before it has time to actually switch and to detect that and switch ranges. So it's, you know, there's a trade-off. And the way you can get around that is by adding extra capacitance there to sort of like hold the charge long enough so it detects it and then can, you know, and then it can has time to range to a lower value shunt resistor so that then the processor won't, you know, shut itself off because the voltage has dropped too far. And it's really tricky business.
It is tough. Yeah. It's tough. I mean, Keithley too, but we weren't even doing the visualization piece. So it was like most of the time, and I think that's the thing that a lot of people associate with. If you're looking at it, say you have like a nice DMM and you are, and it is great at auto ranging, even in the fastest auto ranging, are you going to catch what it looks like? You know, if you have a spike in current, You know, if you just see that the display blips, you pretty much need to be looking at that like on a time-based scope in order to like to catch like, oh, there was an event there. You know, you need to see that spike and that kind of thing. So, and I found the other one I was thinking of is OTII by Coitech, and that's another similar product. So they use to advertise on your site. If you didn't know.
Oh, Coitech, yes.
Yeah.
What is it, the OTII?
That's the name of the actual product. The OT is the product.
So. Oh, yes. Oh, of course. Yes.
Yeah, so I've used that too. That one was a little tougher for me. I think the voltage ranges were different on that one. Like that was only 3.7 and below.
Yeah, no,
like
that didn't go down low. It was for higher power, was it, from memory or something? I don't know. I'd have to...
I don't know. But it did, I mean, it did similar things too. And it, you know, it's still out there. So, but I think that like basically these days, in order to get, you know, the measurements you need like that, you know, so I'm doing like LoRa stuff and cellular stuff and Wi-Fi stuff. And basically when you're doing these things, most of the time you're going to be asleep. So you got to be ready for that when that slug of current comes in, because surprisingly, even with LoRa stuff, I don't even know, like even LoRa stuff, when it's in like a transmit mode, it's it's dropping 20 milliamps, you know, or more.
Yeah.
So
yeah, for sure.
It's up there, you know.
No, so, the Coitech one is only 4K samples per second, and it's only one microamps to 5 amps. So it doesn't do the really low stuff.
It doesn't do really low stuff.
Yeah, so that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Got it.
But it's cool.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, they're great.
But
I mean,
this new one, this dual scope looks all right.
Yeah.
It's pretty much, it's not too dissimilar to what I'm working on at the moment, actually. So,
well, there we go, competition.
Yep, totally.
Cool.
So,
hey man, competition's good. That means there's a market, so that's good. That's good. Now,
mine was
going to
be
higher. Now you have the specs to compete against.
Right, I've got a price and I've got a spec. Right, I can beat that.
Exactly. Yep.
Yep.
That's great. That's great. Yeah.
Yep.
I was going to mention the. I didn't actually put this on the thing anywhere. I've been playing around with the. NRF91. Did I mention that in the show at all yet?
No.
I'm really excited about that too. So, like, I had mentioned that what was it? The SAM-R34. That was that LoRa chip I mentioned a couple weeks back.
Yeah.
That's a cool looking little chip. But this is a module that's from Nordic. So Nordic Semiconductor got into the cellular business. I knew about this a while ago, but I wasn't allowed to talk about it. But now it's released. And And so it's a modem, but it's got. So it can do LTEM, which is like the low power cellular service that's rolled out a bunch of places. Mm. It can't do a lot of other stuff though. It can only pretty much do low power stuff. It's going to have NB-IoT, which is like the other that's, you know, Cat M1 and Cat M2 are the two cellular low power cellular things. But but the crazy thing is it can do GPS as well. So in like this package, it's probably.
Right.
Like 20 millimeters by 10 millimeters, I think. It's pretty tiny. It can do GPS and cellular for like, I think the list price is like $15. So, I mean, still not like super cheap, but you know.
No, it's not dime a dozen, but it's,
Right.
No, to have that sort of functionality a few years ago would have been super expensive.
Oh my God, yeah, exactly. I mean, so like, and I was designing with like U-Blox modems and similar, like in other ones, there's just, you know, they're power hungry. You know, this is going to be low power. And so having access to cellular stuff too, I just think I'm really excited. So I got a dev board and I'm really excited to try it out. Or I've been playing with a little bit, but like, you know, try it out in my own design. And yeah, it's a crazy time we're living in, man. Like the chips that are available these days, everything's just like getting combined into everything else, you know. Yeah. But that's, you know, then there's also, I think, like a lot of these new things too. So like the NRF91, I know it uses Zephyr, which is a RTOS, and a lot of the things are like, you know, basically there's these higher level things like you're talking about at the beginning of the show, right? You're so abstracted from everything, which is good at the beginning because, you know, you and I are software dummies, but bad when something goes wrong. You know, basically you have to find someone to call when there's something wrong, because digging down into the stacks and stacks of software, it's like, boy, I hope.
No, thanks.
I hope I can find something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're just bumming around, really.
Right,
if
exactly.
If you just try and do it yourself. Yep.
I am, so speaking of RTOSes as well, I don't know if you've seen the AWS thing too. that was on the list. So yesterday they announced, AWS. So like this stuff's all, yeah, so Amazon Web Services, that's like the
Amazon, yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. So they do,
they're doing an RTOS? What?
So yeah, they have been doing one. So they've been doing one for a while. This is basically AWS IoT is like one of the offerings where they're trying to like, kind of like suck in your data.
Oh yeah, it's one of their million offerings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like using MQTT servers and like a lot of like standard stuff like that. Basically like these verified endpoints. So basically you have a device somewhere in a field and it's talking to the internet and it needs to dump its data somewhere. And so basically it has to like certify itself with the AWS network, and then it can say, then it'll basically dump data to this effectively public but not actually public web address.
Right.
And that's what the certificates are for. So
I did say years ago, didn't I, that Amazon Internet of Things would actually be the winner. Would actually
I remember
ultimately
talking about that.
The smaller players would, you know, ultimately fall by the wayside.
I don't agree with this. Well, maybe the smaller players, but like Google's this and Microsoft Azure. Like the big players that are. Yeah.
Well, look, if I was, we mentioned this before. If I was designing a product that needed, you know, like to work for the next 10 years, I'm not going to be using, you know, some little tin pot service. I'm going to be using the Amazon Internet of Things service, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's just more guaranteed to be there long term.
Yes, I generally agree.
Maybe not a Google one, because Google have a habit of, you know, canceling their projects and stuff like that.
I think on the server side stuff, they're usually a little better. Maybe the consumer stuff, I wouldn't trust with my life.
Okay.
I wouldn't bet my Google Glass on it. How about that?
Still can't sell it?
You know, at this point, Dave, I'm just cherishing the memories.
it'll be like the equivalent of long hair and sideburns in the 1980s, you know, it's like, you know, the big hair thing. You'll look back and I can't believe I wore that. You know, I can't believe I had hair like that. It's like, I can't believe I wore Google Glass, you know?
Yeah. Moving on.
Oh, dear.
Anyways.
You were
so
excited about that. It was hilarious.
Okay, all right, yes. We all think it's so friggin' funny, Dave.
It's great.
Oh, boy.
Anyway.
Now I've lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah, so free RTOS. So Amazon a while back, it was probably about 2 or 3 years ago, they started basically developing for free RTOS, having their own flavor of it. So basically they put a bunch of hooks in so they could hook into AWS easier. They've been developing for like Espressif, so like the ESP32 and ESP8266. So there's a bunch of starter kits with that kind of stuff. And now they just announced that they're going to start supporting RISC-V stuff as well. So obviously that's RISC-V is an ISA. It is not a chip, which means it's an instruction set architecture, as we've learned over and over again. Listen to past shows and all of the angry comments about it. But they're supporting things like the it's in the article. But basically, there's a couple of chips that are out that they're supporting at the beginning, and basically they're going to start porting to other architectures over time.
Right.
I think that's going to be even more interesting, you know, if they define things for broader architectures, right? So like, if they make a device that could hook into that ISA and work with that, but I don't know how the hell that would work. Because the reason I say as much is because I think the RISC-V stuff that's really interesting is the people that are putting on FPGAs and making custom things. So if you can only use it on, you know, 2 or 3 chips in general anyways, it's less interesting. But this is a good move. I think this is great. So
cool. Does it work? Do you know if the RISC-V works on like the super low end FPGAs?
It does, yeah. Like, so like Clifford, who's been on the show, he actually has one. It's called like Pico LV, I think.
Okay.
Pico RV, I believe. Yeah. So Pico RISC-V, right?
Right. Oh, okay.
Pico R5.
It's a special version of it that's optimized for low.
Yeah. So that I think that's going to be the thing that's interesting. We're going to see more and more people that are building their own processors based on the architecture. Like they're. I'm not sure how many there are out there, but I keep seeing newer and newer things out there where people are like, they're building entire processors around this architecture.
Yeah,
and then,
but it's only like a handful of people. in this kind of, like, it's, you know,
a lot more than you think, though.
Joe Average is not going to be, you know, they just want to get their product done. They just want to get the job done. They're not going to worry about rolling their own processor.
Yes.
Right?
You know, I totally agree with that. But I'm just saying there's a lot more than there would have been.
Oh, sure.
So like in the FPGA space, right? So for a long time, it's like if you wanted a processor in there, you got to either use one of the open ones. I think the Cortex M0 maybe had like, they had like a license free things. But I'm just thinking about like the old FPGAs that I worked on. There was like some that you could put in there.
Yeah.
But they were either the ones from Xilinx or Altera, or like one or two other, maybe ARM like licensed some of the low end stuff. Mm-hmm. And then there's like an 8051.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
There weren't like a ton, but now it feels like there's just a lot more available out there, and people are doing open source licensing as well. So it's interesting, I think, you know. I don't know how that stuff works at all, because then you have to probably have to, I mean, there must be, what, they have to write like your own machine code to
I was going to say about that, you know, we've had enough issues with, you know, mainstream processors, you know, the ST ones and the compilers that, you know, like everyone's using, and yet we still run into issues. I mean, you know, you've got to wonder, got to be concerned with how many issues are hidden in these,
because
know, like in the scheme of things, like hardly anyone's using, you know, these RISC-V ones yet. So it's like, many hidden issues? If you, you know, start developing your product, you know, you might run into some weirdo issue. So, yep.
I think you're right. But I think that also goes back to, like, most people doing this stuff are not going to use that stuff. I think they're going to, you know, maybe if they pick a RISC-V one, they're going to grab one off the shelf that there is, like, a, you know, consensus around. But I don't think that it's going to be, I think right now it's researchers and people tinkering around and, you know, the true crazies in the best of ways, like Clifford. I think we're gonna move towards that in the future. Excellent. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays with like services like this, though, right? So like, how then does RTOS get ported to a new processor like that, and seeing how that stuff works in the future will be interesting. So the reason I was looking at RTOS in the first, the three RTOS, this came up when I was looking at stuff a while back. I was looking at, like, okay, so now I have a thing in the field. Say it's cellular, say it's Wi-Fi, say whatever it is. It's connected somehow.
Yeah.
How do I actually manage, and I think maybe mentioned on the show, how do I manage to push new firmware to some of the stuff that I have out there, right? So say I have a thousand units in the field, right? They're all connected. Yep. They're capable of receiving this stuff. But how do you actually manage, like, okay, well,
you need you need a wireless bootloader system. You got to add the, you know, like everyone's used to like serial bootloaders and, you know, maybe USB bootloaders and stuff like that. But then you've got to add the serial, you know, if you're going to, you got to add the Wi-Fi stack, and all this has to go in the bootloader section. And some sections of micros, right, only have limited bootloader space, physical space. It's not an arbitrary large, you know, it's not like 30, you know, if you've got a 64K process, you can't make a 32K bootloader, you know.
Right.
It's like some of them are actually physically constrained. So,
Yep. Yeah. Sounds tricky. And I think that that, so like the free RTOS has it built in basically. So like some of that stuff is it helps handle that kind of thing. There's another one out there called Mongo. So and I basically asked on Twitter, like, I'm not like finding this, and I'm like, I know everything. No, this is me asking on Twitter, and a lot of people responded very nicely. There's another one called Mongoose OS, and that basically handles some of that stuff as well. And and there was one or two other solutions, because I was basically like, okay, so now I make a completely custom device. I want to have this thing in the field. I want to be able to update it. What are my options? And it's, you know, you know, either you write your own bootloader like you're talking about, or you grab someone off the shelf like, you know, the Amazon Free RTOS or Mongoose or something like that. And then you deal with all the other things that are missing or included with it.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
That's always the thing. When you're targeting for a specific feature, then you're stuck with all of the other warts that it has. You know, that's the problematic side of it. I have not made a decision yet personally, but I'd love to hear if people have. I mean, like, it's just a hard problem to solve.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are services too. So like Particle is a good example. Like, they basically handle a lot of this stuff. You're in their ecosystem, but you have to be. Like, you can't make anything custom out. You know, basically they have that module that, like, the hardware's locked down at that point.
Of course.
And you can, you know, like, interface with things, but then they handle that software piece. And so it's kind of, you know, either, you know, you pay to be in that ecosystem, which is
you've
fine.
You've got to be locked into the, yeah, you become locked into the ecosystem. You've got to choose to buy into that.
Right. And, but, you know, like when you really look at the costs, sometimes, you know, I've looked at the costs and I'm like, oh shit, maybe it's just worth it to do that. You know, like
there are
balance points where sometimes it's worth it just to pay your way out of it. And,
Totally.
So interesting stuff there as well. I mean, some of this stuff, we'll see if any of it ever takes off. You know, a lot of these projects that I work on, it's like I'm trying to figure out if it'll work and can it work. And sometimes the answer is nope. So, I talk with people about what the actual answer is, and here you know, lay it all out there, and they go nope. So. That's fun.
Oh, but you're not thinking outside the box. You can't just say no.
I'm not thinking. I mean, I can say nope. I say nope. It's just, you know, I have to accept that the answer might be, we're not going to pay you anymore, Chris. And say, okay.
Yeah, right. Well. How's the consulting gig going?
It's going pretty good. I was thinking about the other day. I think I'm averaging about 2 boards per month. You know, I've got a bunch of different clients, and it's still challenging. That's
good.
Is it
board layout you're doing, or are you designing systems, or are you, like, what are they calling on you for?
A little bit of both. I mean, like, so sometimes it's like, so for, like, a simple system I just started on, it's like, here's a problem. How do we do this? And that from that, you know, ended up, like, the solution was pretty simple, actually. You know, it was just, like, needing to switch things on and off in certain ways. And, okay, I basically used some of my past experience to design a board, fit their form factor. That was, like, one thing.
Right.
And that's cool, right? It's not going to be the most – I could have gone crazy. I could have been like, well, let's put an Intel processor in there.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
We need a 20-watt power supply. You know, but, like, that's not the right actual answer for solving a problem. And sometimes it's more like, hey, I've got a prototype. I need to make this a product. That's another one that I've been doing. And that's usually board layout and hardening. And that's interesting, too, from its own perspectives.
So do you think you'll end up finding yourself, like, not pushed, but sort of like falling into some niche, like Mike Harrison, for example, his, you know, lead art things? Do you think you'll end up like that, or do you... Or are you? Would you like that, or would you actively try and fight it if you have found yourself? I'm not going to take that job because I did that last time. You know.
I think there are some jobs that eventually I would pass off. I wouldn't say no to. I would try and find someone else for them first.
Right.
But I don't know. I think that's more of like honestly, it's some of it is skill, right? And I think that Mike is. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, if people haven't listened, go listen to shows where Mike's on. Holy crap, is that guy skilled, right? and, like, look at his projects. It's amazing. But I think that's also a function of networking as much as anything else. And that's one of the things that I've been learning is Mike definitely has a name in that space as well. So, like, the reason he keeps getting work like that is because he is one of the best in the area. You know, like, it's just – and he takes jobs based on the projects he wants to – the problems he wants to solve.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, has been increasing in complexity over time. I'm speaking for him, of course. I don't know if that's actually the case.
I think it's right.
And so I think it's going to come down to, like, if I keep – doing decent networking and I have clients that like me and they recommend me for other things. Mm-hmm. I could get pigeonholed, but I don't think that they're specific enough right now.
Right.
That's a problem.
Got it.
So.
Yep. Cool.
Yeah. So we'll see. But I really do like it right now. I mean, there's some tough days, but.
Right.
You know, I will say again, the forum that I started, the consulting forum, it's been great for support and asking questions and, you know, bitching about stuff. Like, that's great. So if there's people that are interested in consulting or are consulting, there's a forum for applying, and you can join us if you want.
What's the address?
It's a Google forum, so I'll just put a link in the show notes.
Oh, it's a do Googles do forums?
It's a Google form, sorry.
Oh, form
and forum.
Form.
Yeah, it's
How
a Google form
work?
To apply.
Yeah.
And then it's a, what do you mean? Yeah, so it's like the forms that we do for
forum
with
no
you.
Yeah, I know about the forums, but how do people chat and discuss things?
Oh, they don't. So that's what they use to apply. And then they, then I give them access to the forum with a U, which is just a hidden part of the contextual electronics forum.
Oh, okay, right. It's a private section. Right. Okay, got it.
Yeah, yeah.
Got it.
Yep. Yep.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's great. It's great. We are starting to run out of time. Are there any things on this list that you wanted to go over? There's some stuff I'd like to mention real quick.
Then you mentioned them.
First off, Latch Up, another conference. Is happening. This one is...
See, conferences everywhere that we don't have here. Let me guess, it's not in Australia.
It is not. It's in Portland, Oregon. It's a. It's about open silicon. So this might be some of the RISC-V people, RISC-V. So that's coming up in the week after KaiCon, actually. So it's May 4th and 5th, I think. That's out in Portland. So that'll be an interesting one.
It's a conference dedicated to free and open source silicon. Wow, that's a niche crowd.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I think the last one was in Europe. It was, I think like 150 people. So.
Wow, okay, cool. That was probably the entire community turned up, right? The entire...
Yeah, I think it was a lot of people. Yeah, I think a lot of people were working on similar stuff, right, were there. So,
right.
But I think there's a lot more on the state side, so that kind of helps to, you know, if you make it at least on the right continent, people can travel a little easier.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. There's another link, Kickstarter and China Manufacturing. You got it all wrong. It's a bit of a longer read, but basically it's kind of a discussion about like people, you know, stuff we've talked about here where people are going to China with the Kickstarter stuff. They don't really know what they're getting into.
And they think that they specifically can just on the pay IP money side. And it happens, magically happens.
Right, right. Yep. So that's a good post. I do recommend it.
Let me guess, the answer is no, it doesn't just magically happen.
It does not just magically happen. That is correct. How did you know?
I'm an oracle.
Yeah. let's see. Robert Fernick made a video about cheaper PCBs. So, past guest of the show, definitely check out that video. Let's see any others here. This is an interesting one as well. Timpan is an open source hardware and software developer for hearing aid stuff. I thought you'd like that because you've done hearing aid stuff in the past, right?
Yes, I've done work for Cochlear. Stuff. Yep. It wasn't hearing aid. It was the implant.
So
stuff,
this is kind of trying...
But yeah.
Oh, okay. Yep. Implant, right. Yeah. So that's an interesting open source project that's coming up. And yeah.
Sweet.
I don't know. There's a lot of other stuff on the... Oh, there's the Grace Hopper video too. That one's good.
I've seen that. It does the rounds every couple of years, you know. Yeah,
it's old. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
People post it and then it gets viral for a few days and then rinse and repeat every couple of years.
I mean, because she's awesome.
Yep. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. I've watched it several times.
That's about it. I mean, there's a bunch of other things on there, so. Yeah, check it out. I think
cool bananas.
I think there's a lot of good. There's always a good post on the. If you follow the subreddit, that's a good place to go. Those all get posted to the Amp Hour Twitter, so you can follow it there as well. And you know, you can always follow myself and Dave. Dave is EEVblog on Twitter, and I'm Chris_Gamble.
And you don't always get electronics related stuff. No,
you don't. That's correct.
Take it or leave it.
That's right. Yep. All right, man. Well, we'll talk soon.
Catch you next time.